Okay, guys, I'm looking forward to hearing your words. We're going to kick off with Kevin Walsh. Welcome, Kevin.
So this is the nature of form. What is the nature of pain? The manner in how everything is made to be broken. The manner in how all beginnings are made to have an end. Something that goes beyond the vein of that sickly sweet gushing of the blood rushing from your head. Something that goes beyond the vein of that breath that escapes you when your chest cavity feels it can no longer breathe. Physical or mental, emotional or spiritual, a formless object, indiscriminate, desolate, universal. What is the nature of love? The emotion that makes us driven, driven to light, driven to dark, driven to challenge and break down the borders of hormonal chemicals and logical responses, or in reverse, driven to crumble and break down the pillars of strength we hold to a mangled wreck. Love or lust, infatuation or limerence, a formless object, timeless, circumstantial, omnipresent. What is the nature of duty? The nature of the orders we are given from birth, the thing that is derived from the other and the self, the without and the within. Maybe it is something designed to rise above love. Maybe it is something designed to rise above pain. Maybe it is a delusion for one to believe they can reverse the irreversible. Maybe it is an enlightenment for one to believe when there is nothing else to believe. Live and learn. Do or die. A formless object. All-consuming. Ingrained. Omnipotent. What is the nature of rhetoric? A locus for some to pass on our learnings to the next generation. A form for others to poison the world with ritual and spit. A tangent to reverse our boredom and forward our entertainment and consolidate connection. A tangent used to empower or a tangent used to destroy. Whisper or shout. Word or fist. A formless object. Powerful. Dangerous, but all is given form by sapient beings.
Stanley Matt, everybody. Because the old night's really busy, it's always fantastic, but we'll try to keep it to about 2 or 3 nights each, please.
Okay, this is a poem I wrote in 2016. It's part of a thing I'm working on. We have to write two pieces from 1916. Two for 2016 and two for God Help Me 3016. There's three elements to it, I suppose. Those 5-word poems you wrote tonight, hang on to them because you never know when they'll be handy. This has quite large elements of 2 5-word challenge poems I've written over the last while. And the third element was I somehow found a bit of anger. Anyway, here we go. It's untitled at the moment. History shows adventure and freedom often come at equal price. Many a Viking, crusader, mariner or freedom fighter will, among tales of tacking dolphins and deadly danger, recall family left behind or fallen comrades, the price of bravery or maybe greed. The men and women of 1916 owed many such a tale, some never told, others long forgotten, and yet more, still forever in sepia soaked images, sit silent in ancient homes, drawers and landfills. Those images were once lucid events in the minds of Irish citizens, as lucid perhaps as the tales that now fill our papers and congest our modern web. Tales of broken promises, minefields of mindless manifestos, puppet politicians and monopolised media. Tales we should never forget, tales we must recall. Tales of special advisers for whom the salary cap was too small. Tales of our territory stupidly terrorised by austerity. tales of elected representatives from every corner of the island practicing the same old election echolalia. I promise, I promise, I promise, I promise, I promise, I promise. Tales of businessmen and business deals garbed in brown envelopes. Tales of ordinary men forgotten, working families without a roof. Teenage boys so stressed they seek freedom in the depths of a river or the barrel of a gun. Is it for this the mockery the rebels rose? Is this the future they imagined? Was our government free of empathy, understanding and compassion their ultimate goal? Were they not emphatic when on the GPO steps they declared the Republic guarantees religious and civil liberty, equal rights and equal opportunities to all its citizens? Were they not explicitly coherent when they resolved to pursue happiness and prosperity for the whole nation, to cherish the children of the nation equally, oblivious of the differences which divided a minority from the majority in the past? Such noble words ring hollow when tales of bankers laughing on the phone at us, I say, not those we elected, are met by stony silence in Leinster House, feckless lackadaisia from the fraud squad, indefinite inaction in the court. Yet these noble words remain enshrined in the proclamation on which we launched this state, and they remain enshrined and active in many, many an Irish heart. Hearts that cry equality, a future for our children, shove your water charges up your arse. And there, right there is the rebel blood that brought us freedom. There, right there is the rebel blood that still lives in Dublin, Belfast, Cork and Donegal, and brings hope to us all. Hope that one day the elite will be told the system you cannot beat, and pay their fair share of tax so those that lack can live the life promised by men and women who envision their people free from foreign hands and equal in every way on every inch of this land. Oh yes, some tales we must remember and remember forever, because it is in these we dress our votes.
Now could we have our lady in red, Gabriella Calera. Good evening. Tonight I want reading Portuguese for the essential because of the reason of lack of time. But in this case, it's not really a bad situation because this poem is not really lyrical or oral like the other ones. It's, although it has rhyme and rhythm, it's not really meant to be worldly treaty like, so essential in story, so it's not really that wrong that I read the translation instead of the original one. So it's called The Statue, and here it goes. It was yesterday that I saw her by the window, alone in the middle of the garden, surrounded by the beautiful jasmine and primed by the beautiful rose. But just like a sad illusion of a grey rock she was made, with stony flowers in her hands. But you don't. In the middle of the flowery garden I look her still forehead, and I lament her bad fortune by seeing so much enchantment wasted in a single lady of stone, and her eyes are gazing in vain the skies that she'll never see. But you don't. She can even return a smile whenever I look at her. Her permanent lack of soul revolves in her hard gaze. She has a discontented face. She doesn't know pain or reason, and her grey skin can't feel anything. But you don't. I wave at her at nothing, and at least I can smile at you. You can return my smiles between your rosy lips. And it's pointless for her having a mouth, because she'll be shut forever. Why is she ever a woman? But you don't. Poor grey statue, she doesn't know if she's a stone or a woman. And you, made of flesh and bone, you're expected to be the one that brings love. But here I am, always tormented, without deserving a sight of yours. So I think we both can learn the lesson given by the Lady of Stone, because carved in her great chest, she has a flowery heart, but you don't. Thanks.
This is one I wrote today. It's called Outsider. It's kind of a meditation on what it's like to be an outsider. Outsider. Not quite fitting in. Always on one's guard. Checking what one's putting out. Forever wondering where sanity is. Ever mindful of one's difference. Cannot stand in for another. Keeping things at an abstracting distance. Wondering where one's society is. Confused by the concept of normal. Living with an unutterable anguish. Struggling to be understood. Standing in anonymous corners, never to be called.
Written in red pen, is it Owen Rua or Aaron Rua? Owen.
A short poem for a journey between Cork and Tory Island that I made in 2000 with my friend Anthony Maloney, who's no longer with us. From Cork to Tory, by train to Sligo, by bus to Bunbeg, by ferry to Tory, a five-roomed hostel, a pepper steak dinner, they acquired their nut. Anyway.
Ryan Parsons, reluctantly.
Even if I go outside, like seriously.
Okay, we're good.
I've never been here before and I'm not into poetry, but this has been lovely. I'm a musician, so I'm going to try transpose one of my songs into just a cappella. So bear with me, please. Haven't written this song in God knows how long. Forget God, it's no religious song. You got me cooking my heart, it's smothered by my brain. You got me thinking, silly. You got me thinking about the times in your room when smiles are all we share. And then we cuddle, you're like a polar bear. If I could do it over and over again, I'd do the same damn thing or join the clergyman. Don't wrap your fears around someone. Just wrap your feelings. Tell me about your little horses. I already know your fears and truths. Although we're both on different courses, there is no race can cross the finish line. Don't rip your fears around someone. Just rip your feelings. Don't rip your fears around someone. Just rip your feelings.
Back in it, and then he said, no, I just don't need a mic anymore. Patrick Lochner.
I'm going to do two short pieces, one as a poem and one as a translation. The first one has a line of French in it. I don't speak French, so excuse the pronunciation. And it's called Waiting for French. Over the PA of an Air Canada flight, sounding like an imposed decoration. All this keeping us grounded with the French and French Canadian. flashes of comprehension in some words like lights on the tip of a ring. Out of the darkness with the stars and closer to an understanding. As we indulgently listen to begin, waiting for French and eager ignorance, our first in economy book was long clashed as the flashes dimmed with disinterest. But there, in the full light of significance, the shrugged tongue surer than any belt, the green hands are at last animated. Tomorrow, the 17th of May, is kind of the National Literature Day in a part of Spain called Galicia, and I have spent a lot of time there, and I do a lot of translations from the poetry of the region, so I said I would do a short one now. This one is titled The Sasson Passes, and it's by the poet Lucio Avaneda, and it was actually admitted to their archive at the foundation. The Sasson passes over the still copse that sinks into a long death, as if it wasn't the father's son. Fragrant are the last ripened fruits, silent are any birds remaining. Come evening, everything wants to be there. The leaves fall, turning.
Charles Clark, please.
Oh.
Serious element from UCD, or perhaps find yourself in a minority of one or maybe two, and on this occasion I found myself in the Central Library with one of the best known men in Dublin of that period, Lord Wicklow. In splendid blue-green tweeds, Billy stood in the library overlooking the square. I quarried commentaries in a dim recess. He addressed the lady librarian in a loud voice on anything that took his fancy. Edward Longford was suited to her when he was at Eton, but was naturally in the conversation. A layer of dust settled unnoticed. Of Goodyear, Shelfmanku, he offered an unfortunate name for an archbishop. One knew that his own books carried on the title page, translated from the French by the Earl of Wicklow, appropriate devoirs of a hard-up peer. The green rectangle beyond the windows and oasis for keyholders of yore belonged to the Archbishop of Dublin, man of princely courtesy. On the plans for a new cathedral, a sandy brown parvise faced the National Gallery of Ireland and Leinster Law.
Cosmetic surgery. I've had to discipline myself. Now waiting to be swept off my feet. A full cursor beatifying the text. A worm puncturing the page. Words are what we Go on, punctuating actions with a blind stare. Being laughed at is some comfort. Acknowledgement for existence suffices. Looking through a silent window, cars on a singular quest roll by, constant wearing for a singular hour. And then for mourning, we heard from saying. The time is ripe for decapitating daisies, but with all care indiscriminately. For it's again in time to repeat the necessary bloodshed to keep the peace. Too chatty for some, irrespective of weather, not hurting to do chores required, for an experience for the sake of silence, enjoying restraint in style. Thank you.
Porridge. I stir quickly and the porridge sticks to the sides. I pull the ladle along the edge of the saucepan to remove the excess. You stir slowly. No mess adheres. Afterwards, I like to wash the pot. You soak. When alone, will we even make porridge?
Rebecca McInnes. Richard and Till, Richard Oakshill, while Rebecca's getting ready there, please. Yes. The 5-word winner. I didn't want to put the pressure on me.
I'm trying to bring back those there. This poem was called If My Life Was on a Skip. After James Fenton's poem. James Fenton's poem is called Skip Life, but this is my version of it. If my life was on a skip, there would be a gangway of scaffolding planks covered with red carpet and elaborate awards for the hard labours of men with squeak wheelbarrows who ran the gauntlet up those planks day in, day out, and they themselves were unceremoniously, thanklessly dumped upon. If my life was on a skip, it would not just be an ordinary life, it would be a hard-to-gauge life. The biggest roll-on, roll-off skip would be needed. There would be a kitchen table and tay, and seats around the perimeter like a living quarter in a Turkish medina. If my life was on a skip, it wouldn't be all about me. Only every dog on the street, every beggar and bum, waster and loser. It wouldn't be just any old life. The collection would be late life. The truck can't lift a load life. Afraid the arse might fall out of his life. If my life was on a skip, the banks man on the construction site would come with clanging chains, signal to the tower crane, give the order to lift me up high. As I trolleyed out, I would slew left for one final spin around town, looking over back gardens and streets, past smiling women in windows, barking dogs and cats, gable ends and ridges. If my life was on a skip, I would sing to myself on Fridays, hear echoes reverb in my ears. I'd have security refusing entrance to all parking ticket inspectors and clampers, no jumped up managers in suits or officials from officialdom. If my life was on a skip, it would be left on a hard shoulder on the bypass to Ballincollig, where the honeysuckle grows beside briars and sweet scented dog roses.
Please send my skip to Galway for music and poems, and Louis de Prayer would come for tea. Words would flow in ever swirling words would flow in ever swirling circles around my skip life. It would be some crack. Due to popular demand, the Shamnos singer on Shop Street would arrive, dance around in my welded plate floor with sparks from her tapping heels, and she would spin, the words would spin, and we would all spin in faster and faster circles into the early hours. It would be the last harangue. Thank you.
I'm Becca. This tune is called Midnight on the Water. I haven't played it in a really long time, so I've played some high notes.
Shirt, and as I was walking back, the weather changed, and there was a lashing rain, and I got absolutely soaked. And I was wearing very light clothes, absolutely soaked. I walked into UCC, just wrecked, and a security guard was looking at me like, "What are you doing? you know, you're soaking wet. What are you doing walking inside here?" But anyway. When I was writing this poem, I was kind of thinking back to that event. It's not a funny poem at all, but I hope you like it. This is called Sudden Shower. Individuals speak of clouds into other atmospheres they break. I dream of sogginess cloud, my familia would break. Guideless and harmless, it rains. Soaks on fools who dressed in blood red tin shirts today. Rain drops damp deeper wounds on veiled prepared rivers. Rain clicks a dance song of how much they miss being clouds. Thank you.
sort of. I don't know why you're wearing the other blood in, but should you?
No.
I'll take offense to it. Mary O'Connell, please.
Thanks, Michelle. this is for my dad. It's called Green Eye. Through a knothole in time, I see you plane a length of wood. Honey-curled shavings fall to the floor. You kept the tool shed tidy, coiled wire and cable, tacks and nails in labeled jars, screwdrivers neatly bracketed, hammers, hacksaws hung by the wall. A blow lamp raised blistering scabs on the frame of a door. A soldering iron would spit and hiss, loosening a solid bar to silver threads. Saturday mornings in summer, I watched as you showed me the ropes, transfixing the world. Now, no one left to use your gear. Files straddle the shelves. A level's water-green eye vies for space with bits and braces near the yawning jaws of a vice. James O'Leary, please.
My mother lights both tubes a dozen at a time in the hospital chapel. When the prayer list is full, she writes my father's name above the first line. He says that knowing his atoms will disperse through the universe is enough after living well. My mother lights both tubes a dozen at a time. The once grapefruit-sized tumor is reversed to a plum. The pain is with him still. She writes my father's name above the first line before visiting, hoping he won't look worse. After placing Christmas cards on his windowsill, my mother lights both tubes a dozen at a time. The day before his surgery, a choir of nurses sings happy birthday, my mother downstairs in vigil. She writes my father's name above the first line. Though she doesn't attend the services, she arrives every day to put on top of the bill. My mother lights both tubes a dozen at a time. She writes my father's name above the first line.
Thank you. We're going to wrap up the night now with Ciarán McCartney down the back.
Pleasure to hear you tonight. And the attendance is very good, so clearly you're very good at making it to cultural events, which is lovely to see. How good is your attendance at football matches?
Not as good as my shirt.
But if you went to a football match, you'd hear a lot of poetry. Football chants are of the quickest ways you're ever going to hear. So, if you're going to Cork City match, you might hear a phrase like City till I die. Right? That's what they said they were going to do till they die. Till they die, you can say whatever you're going to do till you die, right after I say what I'm going to do till I die. I'm going to say a poem first, though, before that chant begins. This is called Liberate or Indoctrinate. To say youth is wasted on the young is a rich comment from men and women who've made adulthood a shameful enterprise. an operation in disowning your ideals to quieten the mind in moments of indulgence that cripple others. The more you lose, the more you have to gain. Your aspirations softly strangled, passed over in silence, sacrificed for the security of servitude. Making peace with dissatisfaction, the welcome devil you know, and waging war on your intuition. Equipped with a wealth of cheap thrills that stimulate the brain while your conscience is gagged behind the shut doors of the mind so efficiently its screams are stifled to but a breath. No change comes, for the messenger that brings the most vital of news from the brain to the heart is pleasuring himself behind the eyes at base camp, watching porn, while in some Hollywood basement the young woman is pinned to a bed to bring you the season finale. And you recognize her, for she has sold her love for money in the same way that you have. Just louder, or maybe not nearly as loud. You are a vessel seeking stimulation and will take it at any cost. To you, to any unknown face, to the earth. In the same way a heroin addict would sell his mother for a hit, your skin suffers no needles. Your addictions are safer, for they are state-sponsored and corporately endorsed, and they were built for you. And safe for who? Only those who have sought so ardently for so long, who have sought safety so ardently for so long they became shrouded in comfort, whose comfort sat in their soul so long their aches began to numb. A dull sensation where nothing hurts is clutched to like a mother clutches her child as it is ripped from her by a soldier. Your well-fed ego reassures you that you are important enough to clutch your comforts as a mother clutches her child in a war until your excesses are primate. Because you deserve it. Now your excesses control you and you are always in want and seldom in need and never able to distinguish a want from a need. For you, your people, or for any stranger. You fear strangers as though it might take your children. A stranger might take your children because they have never been given anything by you or any of your esteemed colleagues or friends. Your children could break your illusion of reality with their words or cries and you would hate them for it. Could melt the ice that your soul is set in, and so you fear them. You could make them safe again by introducing them to your esteemed colleagues and friends. If they do, they will be indoctrinated. If they don't, they will be liberated, and you will dismiss them and their insights, for they are too young. And they could wake you up. And they could wake you up, could wake you up. For you cannot feel love while sleepwalking. Could save you from waste. Even as you shame their existence and describe their youth as wasted on them. I and many, many alike are children of yours. I want to love you, but you hate me, so I can't. I will chant. I'm too young till I die. I'm too young till I die. I know I am, I'm sure I am. I'm too young till I die. Too young till I die. I'm too young till I die.
I know I am, I'm sure I am, I'm too young till I die.